Hi, I'm Josh Rushing in for Fimeo K, and you're in the stream. Today, we're talking about Canada's upcoming snap elections. Will Prime Minister Justin Trudeau regret calling for them? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter. Or hey, look, if you're in YouTube, join us in that live chat right there, and you too could be in the stream. Now, nearly 6 million people have already voted in Canada's upcoming election. That's a record for advance voting. Here's what voters told us matters most to them.
My main concerns this election are the economy and Canada's COVID response. With record government debt, life is just unaffordable. Housing is so expensive that many people my age have just given up on home ownership. Unemployment is still high because of the ongoing lockdowns, and our government has forged ahead with a COVID response that seems to have no regard for our charter rights, our mental health, or our economic well-being.
There's so many issues that I care about during this election campaign, but there's one that I've been thinking about a lot recently, and that's the rise of hate crimes in Canada. Hate crimes have gone up dramatically over the past several years in this country, and they're very underreported. Out of the ones that are reported, only 1% of them are actually investigated by police.
There are three issues that are top of mind for me this election. Number one, the environment, absolutely. Number two, COVID-19 and seeing ourselves out of this pandemic. And number three, human rights issues, which are very important to me as an LGBTQ person.
Joining us to discuss what's at stake in the upcoming election is Melissa Ridgen in Winnipeg, Manitoba. She's the host and producer of APN National News, which focuses on Indigenous peoples. And Fatima Saeed from Mississauga, Ontario. Fatima is a climate reporter and host of The Backbench, a podcast about Canadian politics. And George Affleck, a political columnist from Vancouver, British Columbia. George, so far as I can tell, Canada just had an election in 2019, right? What are they doing having another one? Actually, hold on a second, because here's what Justin Trudeau said to that question.
Okay. Yes. We do have to have an election now because the decisions were taken as a country, the decisions we're taking about what the next months hold, what the next years and even decades hold, they're being taken now. They're being taken in the coming weeks. When this government gets back to office, we need to make big choices about how to end this pandemic and how to build a stronger future for everyone, not a year from now, not 2 years from now, but now. And that's why Canadians are faced with such a clear and important choice in this election.
I don't know if I've ever seen an elected politician ask for permission to do the job he was already elected to do.
Well, he has a minority government. In Canada, it's we have this parliamentary system, and he didn't have majority of the seats that are available. So it's tough for him to make decisions without a full majority of the seats that are available. So it's completely, the real reason he wants this is so he can have a majority, and then it gives him four more years, or five maybe, and that's the reason he's doing it. But that's what we call what he said is spin. It's basically trying to say, we're doing this because we need, you know, your commitment, the voters' commitment to do this so that I know I'm making, you know, the decisions for all of Canada. But really what he's really saying is, I just need my majority so I can get my own agenda done.
Well, but was his agenda being held up because he didn't have a majority in Parliament?
Not really.
Or George. Not really, right?
No, not really. He had the support. I think with the COVID response there was united across all parties. They were united in their approach to making the decisions. And I think he had that support. But he saw the end of the pandemic coming, and he wanted to make sure he had a full majority after that.
And Fatima, this seems to be perhaps backfiring on him. Can you touch on what's going on with O'Toole coming into this race and who he is?
For sure. So Erin O'Toole is the leader of Canada's Conservative Party, freshly minted, got elected as leader of the Conservatives during the pandemic in a virtual leadership race. And this is the first time Canadians have been introduced to him. And he's sort of the yin to Justin Trudeau's yang, as it were, because he's trying to say that he's got the better plan to help Canada get out of the pandemic and recover and tackle things like climate change. And this is a big deal for the Canadian Conservative Party. They haven't exactly tackled climate change until this moment. So we're seeing a climate plan for them for the first time. They have ideas for healthcare and economic reconciliation. So it's a very chaotic election so far, and we're almost at the end of it with 4 days to go. And I think what started as a moment of political opportunism has suddenly been just completely destroyed by some things that we didn't foresee, like Afghanistan, which took up a lot of airtime in the beginning of the election, and other things that were completely predictable, like the chaos over mandatory vaccines or just what to do to end this pandemic once and for all.
So Atul's representing the Conservative Party. We have a clip here I want to share with you. He doesn't sound like any conservative that I'm familiar with. Let's hear this.
And our platform, including a detailed plan on climate change, is about making sure we secure the future, jobs, accountability, national leadership on mental health.
So is it you, sir, or your caucus that's driving the bus?
I am driving the bus to make sure we get this country back on track. And I'm here to defend the rights of all Canadians, women, members of the LGBTQ community, Indigenous Canadians. I want to make sure we...
So, Melissa, not only can the man drive a bus, apparently, but he wants to represent the Indigenous peoples. Does he represent Indigenous peoples in Canada?
Well, you know, he says, I was at that debate, and he said quite clearly, you know, he wants to be working with Indigenous people to advance reconciliation in this country. You know, Canada's got a lot to atone for its 150-year history here. Mm. And it's not just history that happened. These things are ongoing, right? So, you know, he says he wants to do that. This is the same person who voted against UNDRIP. He does not want to share decision-making power with lands and resources with Indigenous Canadians. This is the same person who says if you are protesting or you're blockading things because you are, you know, Indigenous descent, because there's a problem with land and resources, or you're not being allowed to exercise your treaty rights, he wants to criminalize that. So to say that you want to be a prime minister and be representative of all Canadians, including Indigenous people, and work with Indigenous people, I'm not sure how he does that when you are talking out of
shocker
in those
shocker that a politician,
right,
is saying one thing and doing another.
they all do. Everybody who was on that stage, I think you could make a pretty valid argument that they say one thing and do the other. I mean, this isn't specific to Canadian politics. I think that's kind of endemic of
It's specific to the human,
right,
condition, I think. But let's look at Trudeau and let's look at the environment, because everyone says that's important to Canadians. And yet Canada is the worst emitter in the G7 over the past 5 years since the Paris Accords. I have this on my computer if we can show it. Mm-hmm. It hasn't gotten any better under Trudeau. So, Fatima, what's going on with environmental policy, and why hasn't Trudeau been able to do more?
Look, Josh, I'm going to start with the good first and then get to the ugly, okay? The good thing is that Justin Trudeau was the first Canadian prime minister to take climate seriously. Before that, we weren't tackling this file at all. We weren't doing anything. He went to Paris, put Canada on the map when it comes to climate change, and tried to impose a carbon price across the country to much resistance. You know, we had the carbon price go all the way to the Supreme Court because our provinces, equivalent to the United States in the U.S., didn't want them. Many of them, led by conservative premiers, didn't want the carbon price. So he successfully achieved implementing certain policies. The problem is he hasn't done enough, and this election has suddenly become a battle of track records, where you have a Liberal Party that has a lot of plans and ideas and policies when it comes to climate change and curbing the impacts of it, but we're not seeing them in action. They're unfolding very, very slowly. On the other side, you have a Conservative Party that literally has not contended with the climate crisis until this moment, and whose base continues to deny climate change despite what the leader says and keeps saying at debates and public appearances that they are serious on this file. The Conservative platform throws a lot to oil and gas, for example.
Well, I wanted to say to that, you know, for the debate that we did, the debate commission had put out to Canadians, you know, what are the issues for you? What do you want to see the leaders questioned on? Climate, far and away, was the number one. And I thought it was interesting, too. I mean, and this comes on the heels of that report that's saying, you know, the human race has approached code red, sort of, that we're almost past the point of no return here. And I think that's actually resounded with people. That report came out just a couple of months ago, and maybe just in August, actually. Time is flying when you're
trapped
in election
mode. It came out a week before the election was called here.
Right. So, you know, and it was, and I thought it was interesting that within that, how many people in Alberta, which traditionally that's our oil and gas sector, that's where the tar sands are. Everybody mm-hmm. loves having all the big fancy toys and trucks that they have because they make money through the oil sand, through the oil industry. They love their fracking there. And Alberta, people in Alberta were saying, we want climate action and we want to know how we get out of this reliance that we have on these jobs here. We want to still be in the energy sector, but how do you, what would the government of Canada do to get us there?
What were you saying, George?
It's really difficult for us to meet those climate goals because we're a resource economy. That's how we run our country. That's how we pay for everything. Alberta, you know, where we have oil and gas industry is significant. It's really tough to meet those goals because we're a huge country that relies on resource-based economy. And so it's tough to meet those standards that we're within the G7 because those other countries aren't really like us. We are a small populated country that relies on a lot of money coming from the resource sector. But it's interesting that all the political parties, except for one, we don't have to talk about that one, have been fairly supportive and they have said that climate change is real. There's no real climate change denying going on by the major parties in Canada. So I think actually it's less of an issue in this election than we probably would have thought of. Most importantly, people are talking about affordability. They're worried about inflation now. The pandemic is still happening. We're seeing, the issue related to the Conservatives and just today, this battle with Alberta, who went super loose on the regulations related to the pandemic, and now it's coming back to bite them. And the leader of the Conservative Party, who was on a rise, he was heading towards potentially a minority. He was going to maybe beat Trudeau, our current prime minister, now having to backtrack because he said he supported Alberta and the premier and his willingness to open up the economy way too soon. And now he's being asked today, you know, hey, why did you do that? And he's totally trying to spin it and say, he's totally deflecting. So he's in trouble on that issue. And you'll see, a Trudeau surge coming up over the next few days.
Interesting. So look, we're getting a lot of comments on YouTube I want to bring in. This is from Tabitha True. She says, I voted early, but not for Trudeau. He had 6 years to get it right, and now he's trying to force us all to get vaccinated. I'm not okay with that. So let's talk about the anti-vax crowd, but there are a couple more that I want to bring in here. There's Doppelganger Rogue. Trudeau has to go. He's awful. He makes promises and never keeps them, spends 80 times more than any prime minister in Canadian history, and has no plan for a budget or way out of the pandemic. Again, the pandemic comes up. One more, Wally Abro says, can we trust JT and the Liberals after several broken promises, such as election reform, extremely important because Canada is not a democracy right now. Clean drinking water for Indigenous people, etc. All right, so let's talk about it. How is the pandemic and the idea of vaccinations impacting this election? Who wants to jump in on that?
Well, it's driving the bus. It's happening. It's causing the it's definitely driving people's decision making. And as I mentioned, that what happened today and this week with the Conservatives is really working against them on the pandemic front. Trudeau thought he could win this, get a majority because of his handling of the COVID crisis, and it's worked against him.
What were you gonna say there, Melissa?
Well, I'm interested to know, you know, speaking of the 6 million people who have voted and just looking at some of the comments that you've just read there, I don't think it's looking good for the Liberals when you've got that many people who are rushing out to vote. And then anytime you open up a dialogue, it's just Liberal bashing, right? So, but then who's going to pick up the votes? I'm not convinced that it's going to be O'Toole. So us armchair quarterbacks sitting around in my office are thinking, you know, is there going to be an orange wave? And what would that look like? Is it even possible for the NDP? They're so far behind all the time. Could they form government? Or what if you've just got such an even, you know, a closer split between all these parties? How will they work together? Right?
Yeah, yeah, I think we're heading to a seriously divided parliament. And the reason is because you're seeing a lot of intense emotions across this country. Depending where you are in Canada, you have very, very strong feelings about things that the leaders have been unable to address constructively or persuasively during this short campaign. It's only been 36 days. You know, Melissa started up top. We haven't talked about reconciliation in a year when we discovered so many bodies of Indigenous children in residential schools schools across the country. We haven't talked seriously about climate crisis because the pandemic crisis has taken precedence. But when you talk about the pandemic crisis, no leader has a good, straightforward plan to sell. They're sort of muddling their way through it and saying, like, yeah, we'll try this, but we're also going to appease the people who don't want to get vaccines. It's a choice, but also please get vaccinated. It's very confusing. Voters are very confused. And so at the end of the day, you're just left with what have they done? And very angry.
Okay,
so confusion and angry is a bad combination in an election.
You brought up the NDP there. I want to bring in, we have a bit of video from Tanya Cameron. She's an NDP Indigenous Get Out the Vote organizer. Check this out.
First Nations people in Canada only got the right to vote in 1960. Since then, there has been very low voter turnout on reserve on election day. But in 2015, I started First Nations Rock the Vote, where I helped many First Nations people get registered to vote and where I worked with volunteers to get out the vote on election day. And that will prove to be a historic success, where voter turnout on reserve rose up to 61.5%. And in the 2019 federal election, I went partisan and worked for the NDP, and that voter turnout was 51.8%. So here in 2021, I am once again working for the NDP to engage the Indigenous voter in this election.
Okay, so look, I want to go to my computer coming out of this, just so I can catch the audience up to the major parties that are running. The two leading parties clearly are the Liberal Party, the Conservative Party. But then the NDP, the New Democrat Party, well, they have enough to be influential. They're way ahead of the next party, which is a Bloc Québécois, which probably won't be considered here. But I want to ask Melissa, do you see perhaps the NDP coming in, as I think in 2019 they had this kind of role, as perhaps being the kingmakers in this situation?
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of anger towards the Liberals for, you know, they divided Indian Affairs, as it's called, into two separate bureaucracies and are throwing tons of money at this. And it sounds good. And we love that, you know, we show up at all the press conferences where all the money is announced. But the reality on the ground is nobody's seeing results for that, such little results. The amount of money being spent versus the results being seen. I think Canadians are frustrated. I know Indigenous people are frustrated. Where's the results? And what's your plan? Why would we give you a third term when you haven't been able to make any headway despite billions upon billions being thrown at problems like, you know, clean water on reserves, housing, you name it, not even addressing poverty. We're still the most impoverished people in the country. So where do you park your vote? I think you might see that, like Tanya was saying, you might see them parking it not. And I should note, too, that in 2015, Indigenous people came out in droves to vote for the Liberals, and a little bit less so in 2019. Yes. And I think this time, they're not doing it.
Well, that's to the benefit of the Conservative Party. So what's going to happen is that any Liberals, this is how Stephen Harper had a majority for 11 years. This was the split on the left. So and then Conservatives love, please vote NDP, please, because they're never going to vote for the Conservatives. So any way they can persuade Liberals to vote NDP is to the benefit of the Conservatives. And so a orange wave by the NDP, as they call it here, which is the color of the party's, you know, it's actually going to potentially could lead to a Conservative majority in Canada, especially when you look at Toronto, that area, which has a huge number of seats in the Toronto area. You could see a bunch of Conservatives get in there, a couple of seats in my province here in British Columbia, and Quebec. The Ontario and Quebec, two major provinces, control the agenda. Where they go is what forms the government. And if anybody is feeling like they don't want to vote Liberal and they're going to vote NDP, Conservatives are going, yahoo, thank you very much.
So Fatima, what would a Conservative PM mean for the rest of the world? Would Canada interact differently? Would they remain in the Paris Accords? How would it change things for the rest of the world?
I think it would change things significantly. Erin O'Toole has committed to the Paris Agreement, which we now know is outdated, based on the last IPCC report, which suggests the targets should be much higher. And Erin O'Toole has pegged a lot of his foreign policy plans and also general climate plans to that of partners. You know, they say that they'll only increase their carbon price if the United States and the European Union does the same thing, for example. So it will be a very different Canada under a conservative leadership. But if I might add to something that George said, if we're seeing confused and angry voters split the vote on the left, we're also seeing confused and angry voters split the vote on the right.
I was going to say exactly that.
It's a conservative party, but we also have this emerging People's Party of Canada, which is a fringe right-wing group whose leader almost got elected as the conservative leader during the leadership race. You know, he lost by literally a hair. And his party's platform is espousing views like anti-immigrant, Islamophobic, like a lot of like freedom talk kind of views. And his party supporters have been coming out in anti-vax protests and just following Trudeau around with a lot of anger. And there are a lot of people saying that they could split the vote on the right. They could take away votes from the Conservative Party. So it is really, really chaotic here.
Looking at this poll, though, from the CBC that shows Trudeau at like 31.7%, O'Toole at 31.2%, the NDP at 20.1%, and then the People's Party below Bloc Québécois at 6.2%. So if you're looking at the left being really split, it seems like the right isn't as split. But you don't believe these numbers.
I question the PPC one, and the reason why is because I think people are less inclined to admit that that's where they would vote when asked. I think it would be higher. I don't think it's, you know, 20% or anything like that, but I would think if you add a few percent to that, that would be probably more accurate. That's just
we're also seeing, on the ground, we're seeing a lot of purple signs, a lot of PPC supporters on the ground that I don't think is being fully reflected in the polling and the numbers yet, because I don't think these people are inclined to fill these out, but they are coming out in bigger numbers.
Well, the goal for the PPC party is they have no seats currently in the current government. So their goal is to get at least a couple of seats, which they could potentially do given this way. But generally, though, in the last election, even the Conservatives, that was a popular poll you showed there. You know, that's not necessarily how things land. In the last election, the Conservatives actually had the popular vote. They had the majority of Canadians were supportive and voted Conservative. It's just the way we're built as far as our political system. You win by the number of ridings you win, and Liberals won more of them. But the Conservatives had the majority of the popular votes, and they certainly will get it again this time, without a doubt. But will it be enough in the ridings that they need? And those ridings, again, are in Toronto, the major cities, Toronto, Montreal, and to a certain extent, Vancouver.
Well, I can tell you, being in your neighbor to the south, I live in the U.S., that there was a time that we didn't take Donald Trump seriously either. And that certainly reshaped U.S. politics. Do you see the People's Party in that kind of mold?
They use a lot of the same rhetoric that the Trump era brought about. You know, a lot of their slogans are very similar to what we saw at a mini Trump protest. So it is a concern. It's a definite concern. And if they should get a seat in the House of Commons, it would be interesting shift for the discourse. Let's put it like that.
I do think there are people who are looking to the People's Party who don't necessarily, and I can speak to people that I know personally, don't necessarily subscribe to the Trump type politics, but these people just feel that the Conservatives do not appeal to them here. The Liberals, they feel they've wasted 6 years and they're not going to vote for them. The NDP, they look and go, well, we're already, you know, financially devastated as a country here. You can't have the NDP come in because they spend badly, I think, to say the least, is what people would argue, right? Not responsibly. And so you look and go, well, forget it. I'm just angry and I'm just, I'll go vote for these guys then. And it's not that they are racists.
I've got to end the show there. Well, we'll find out what happens on Monday. I'll be thrilled to watch, as I'm sure our audience will as well. So we'll follow it closely on Al Jazeera English. That's the show for today. Until next time, I'll see you in the stream. All right, guys, I got to say, that was the best